And they took me to the gravesite. The young man was talking about he had family in Mexico that killed people or chop people up. I was very scared. I would sit there in that, my eyes closed, thinking, what am I doing? What the heck am I doing in here? It was eerie. I was just laying on that dirt. I thought about Lulu. Like, why did it have to come down to this?
For most of his adult life, Ramon Sosa was a beloved boxing trainer in Houston. But a fateful encounter set in motion a chain of events that put a target on his back. Today, our latest ESPN Daily Essential, the wild story of a murder for hire, secret recordings, and a boxing coach who literally had a foot in his own grave. I'm Mina Kimes. It's Tuesday, May 26th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by Marathon. Tisha, this is one of the craziest stories I've ever seen on ESPN.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts, I'll tell you that. It was crazy learning about it, but it has a very interesting ending.
Tisha Thompson is an investigative reporter for ESPN. She covered this story for E60. So let's start with the beginning. Well, the story begins with our protagonist, Ramon Sosa, lying in an unmarked grave. Totally normal stuff. But let's back all the way up to understand how we got there. Who is Ramon Sosa?
You know, he is a boxer. He's from Puerto Rico originally. He had moved to Houston when he was very, very young with his family, and he'd gone back to the island to be a pro boxer when he was 17. Didn't last for very long, and he ended up going back to Houston. And he had built a pretty significant reputation as a boxing coach in the Houston area.
Boxing hasn't been in my blood all my life. It's something that I love. All I wanted to do was work with these kids and train them.
He has trained pros. He's trained Olympic hopefuls. And he started to work with amateurs, and he really enjoyed working with amateurs, particularly kids, because, as he said, they do it for the heart. And that kids in particular hadn't been corrupted yet, as he put it.
What kind of kids did he work with?
He worked with all kinds of kids. I mean, he had a good enough reputation where kids who wanted to become pros, who wanted to do potentially the Olympics, would come to him. But he also had a very soft spot for at-risk youth.
A lot of them come from very poor backgrounds. A lot of them are single-parent homes. And some of them are kids that are in trouble, and they use boxing because they think they can fight in the streets.
So one of those young men who plays a big role in this story is named Mundo. Or that's not really his name, right?
No, but that's his real nickname. We agreed to conceal his identity because of this story that he had to tell. When Ramon first met him, Mundo had already been shot 6 times, and he had been arrested for a variety of crimes.
Growing up in the neighborhood, the drug dealers, the top gang members, they were the guys that were admired. A gang was just crime, you know, and I chose that.
He had joined his local neighborhood gang when he was very, very young, and he had just been released from jail when he and Ramon first meet. His girlfriend, who is now his wife, had given him an ultimatum. She said, when you get out of jail, you're either going to choose me or you're going to choose the neighborhood. And he decided to pick her. But what it meant was that they had to basically leave his neighborhood. They moved across town to the Woodlands, and he found himself at this like little gym in a strip mall. And he noticed this trainer, Ramon, and how all the kids there tended to gravitate to Ramon. He really liked Ramon's style of boxing, as he put it, the Puerto Rican way of boxing. Ramon noticed Mundo. He noticed that Mundo had all of this fire in him and had what he at first thought was anger in him. And he had the strength, but Ramon says he didn't really know what he was doing. And Ramon eventually approaches Mundo and says, look, I can teach you how to do this really well. Let me work with you. And the two of them really hit it off.
I never worked with nobody one-on-one. For Ramon, he showed me another way. It just set up the stage for me to be his right-hand man.
Mundo says Ramon was the first man in his life to ever take an interest in him, and Ramon became a real mentor to him. Mundo really saw Ramon as his father figure, and by 2007, the two were almost inseparable. Mundo became Ramon's assistant. They started working with lots of kids. They had this nonprofit that they were working together on, and Mundo really thought that they were going to be able to save all of these kids from troubled backgrounds like his. This was something he was super excited about.
So around the time that Mundo starts working with Ramon and becomes like a son to him, what else is happening in Ramon's life?
Well, Ramon, by this time, has been divorced. He has three kids, and his ex-wife has got most of the custody of his kids. And he's starting to now go out to nightclubs with friends. And he says he spotted this woman as soon as he walked into this high-end Latin dance club. Her name was Maria Dolores Durantes, but everybody called her Lulu.
I saw her when I first walked in, and she was on the dance floor. I said, man, that's a beautiful lady over there dancing.
So beautiful, he didn't think he could talk to her. The next thing he knows, she has stepped on his toe with what he describes as 6-inch heels. I can't walk in 6-inch heels, so I think they were probably more like 4, but he says they were 6 inches. And she was super apologetic and says, what can I do to make this up to you? I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. And he says, dance with me. So they end up dancing to this very popular salsa by a band named El Gran Combo. And the song's title translates into English as witchcraft. There's a lyric in the song that says, what will that girl have done to me to have me captivated, to have me half crazed, and now I'm in love? You've got me shivering day and night. You've bewitched me. You want to send me to the cold grave.
Oh boy.
Que tú me tienes temblando de noche y de día. Tú me hiciste.
So, Tisha, Lulu and Ramon end up getting married in 2009. And then a couple years later, they open a new boxing gym in Woodlands, Texas. How did that go?
It was a dream.
Hi, my name is Ramon Sosa.
I am Lulu Sosa.
Welcome to Woodlands Boxing and Fitness.
We offer boxing, kickboxing, and fitness training.
It was what Ramon had always wanted. Up until this point, he was working in other people's gyms. Now he owned his own gym, and they did really well. They were making, he says, about $20,000 a month, and that allowed them to buy all the things that they wanted, a big house, cars, motorcycles. He says that Lulu liked to buy things. And so she had all the highest end handbags, really nice clothing. And this was a big deal for Lulu because when she first arrived in the United States from Mexico, she was cleaning people's houses. Lulu was a really good businesswoman, and she comes in and she starts to take care of the administrative side of the business. She's also training people on the side, but she began to really call the shots in the gym, and the gym was very successful. The one problem was that Mundo felt like his relationship with Ramon was really beginning to change. I mean, Ramon's now got this beautiful wife, this full-time gym that he's got to watch, and his attention is really fully invested in this whole new life that he's having with Lulu. And Mundo's, you know, kind of sitting there on the side.
But then at some point, Ramon's relationship with Lulu also takes a turn.
It does. And we really only have Ramon's version of events. I did reach out to Lulu multiple times. I reached out to her various lawyers, her family, all declined to speak with me. So this is Ramon's version of events. He says they were married for about 5 years, and they were a really good 5 years. And he helps Lulu's mother and her two teenage children eventually obtain U.S. citizenship about 5 years into the marriage by sponsoring them. And Lulu now has her citizenship. And Ramon says it's right about then that the marriage begins to fall apart. Ramon says they begin to argue a lot. She in particular becomes very, he says, irrational.
She got to people that she believed could spread the word out there, like I wasn't the person that the people thought.
What was she accusing you of, or what was she telling people that you were doing?
That I was a drunk, that I was abusive at home, that I was embezzling money. People didn't see me the same way.
Ramon's family, including his daughter, said they never once have ever seen him hit anyone. The police investigated. They said they never found any evidence of embezzlement. And they never felt that there was any abuse in the relationship, any physical abuse in the relationship. And it's not much later after that that Lulu ends up filing for divorce after 6 years of marriage in about March 2015.
So, Tisha, Lulu files for divorce, but the story doesn't get simpler from there.
No, I mean, I think anyone who knows anybody who's been through divorce or has been through divorce themselves knows that it can get really ugly and feelings can get really hurt. But for Ramon and Lulu, it got really ugly.
If we're going to divorce, we're going to divorce the right way. We're going to split our everything, and that's it. But no, she wanted it all, and I think that's where things got rough.
This is when we start to hear from Mundo. This is Mundo's version of events of what happened. He was trying to stay out of their fight, which had been going on for months and months at this point. But one day he's there and he sees Lulu and her teenage daughter in the office, and he overhears them talking about another client, and he starts to realize that they're talking about how this client has a relative in Mexico who is called a cleaner, someone who disposes of bodies at the local drug cartel. And they're trying to figure out if this client can help them with their problem. Mundo walks into the office and starts to engage them in conversation. And he realizes that the problem is Ramon. And he starts to encourage Lulu to confide in him. Remember, he's been trying to stay out of it at this point. So he says, Lulu, talk to me. She doesn't really share anything with him that night. But the next day, when he comes back into the gym, she immediately approaches him and starts to talk to him just as he's about to go into his workout.
She started going off. She goes, I'm just tired. I'm frustrated. I wish he would leave. I wish the cops would pick him up. And then she goes, or I just wish, you know, somebody would make him disappear. What are you talking about, disappear? You're talking about disappear, you know, and I'll make the pistol sign with my hand, you know. She goes, yeah.
Did you think she's talking about killing Ramon?
Yes.
He realizes she's trying to hire someone to kill Ramon. And he goes and does his workout. And you've got to understand, Mundo is, he's a fascinating guy. And there's a side of him that is ferocious. And he says when he was working out, he normally just, you know, beats that bag as hard as he can. But during this workout, he's just tapping it and his mind is racing. He's trying to figure out what is he going to do.
I wasn't even looking for a father, but that's what he acted like. And Lulu acted like a good friend. So when I felt caught in the middle.
He's been given this impossible choice. And when he finishes his workout, he walks up to Lulu and says, I know somebody. I'll give you a call.
We'll be back in a moment. We're presented by Marathon. Now, more than ever, we have to look out for each other and count on each other. And Marathon wants you to know that you can count on them for high-quality, top-tier gas. While we are aware travel might not be top of mind, there might be times where you have to hop in the car to run an errand. Maybe you have to drop off groceries and supplies to your family. Maybe you've become an amazing baker and want to drop off a few dozen cookies on your best friend's porch. Or maybe you just want to drive around to all of your friends' homes simply to wave from a safe distance. But before you head out, remember to fuel up at Marathon. Marathon gasolines are formulated with STP additives. They keep your vehicle running at peak performance by optimizing fuel economy, removing those ugly deposit buildups, and reducing emissions. Remember, wherever you need to go, the people at Marathon are behind you all the way. Marathon, fueling the American spirit. So Tisha, Lulu has approached Mundo, Ramon's good friend, for help killing him. And he says he's going to give her a name. What name is that?
He tells Lulu he knows this guy from his old neighborhood, from his gang, named Paco. And he actually sets up a meeting. He meets Lulu in the parking lot of a strip mall. He convinces her to get out of the car, and they walk over to Paco's truck. He's sitting in the front seat. Lulu gets into the front passenger seat, and Mundo gets into the back row of the truck. And he actually ends up recording this meeting.
Hello, Lulu. Hello.
And he watches as Paco in Spanish asks Lulu, what do you want me to do? You want your husband beaten up, or do you want me to kill him? And she says she wants him dead.
No, no, justicia, yo lo quiero muerto. Yo lo quiero muerto.
And she hands Paco a down payment, about $500 worth of cash and some inexpensive jewelry of Ramon's. It's like his watches and some keychains that had jewels in them. And then she promises him a total of $2,000 and Ramon's truck if he takes out her husband.
Why would Mundo do this? I mean, I understand that he and Ramon had grown apart a little bit, but helping his wife kill him?
Well, Lulu knew Mundo to be a very scary man connected to a very tough gang that has a reputation in Houston. What Lulu didn't see and what she didn't know was that Paco was an undercover detective and Mundo was working with the police.
Wait, what?
So remember that conversation Lulu had with Mundo where Mundo makes her think that he's going to call his buddy who can help her essentially kill her husband? That is not what Mundo actually did. Instead, when he leaves the gym, the very first person he calls is Ramon. Mundo is friends with Lulu at this point. He has a close relationship with her, but he's just not going to do something like this. Not to Ramon, not to anyone. Yes, he had been in a gang, but he has put that life behind him, and he just has no interest in returning to that. But he's also worried that she will find someone who will do the job if he doesn't take it from her, essentially. So he calls Ramon and he says, Ramon, your wife is trying to kill you. And Ramon is basically like, I do not believe you. And Mundo says, no, man, I know what it looks like when someone wants to kill someone and your wife is trying to kill you.
So the whole thing with the parking lot and the money, it's all a setup. And now they've got Lulu on tape saying she wants to hire a hitman to kill Ramon.
Right. So what happened was Mundo and Ramon, they start to gather what they consider to be enough evidence, and they go to the Montgomery County Constable's office. That's like the police department in the area where they live. And Mundo is stressed out. He does not want to go into the building at all. As a former gang member, he knows that he should not snitch. And just the idea of walking into the police department makes him nauseous. But he knows he's got to do this.
So they go to the police. But do the cops buy the story that Ramon and Mundo are telling them?
The detectives are immediately struck by the fact when they run Mundo's criminal background that he really is from one of these gangs that has a reputation. And they realize that Mundo has taken a very serious risk even walking into the building. They too recognize this. And that probably more than anything made him a credible source to the police.
They also listened to recordings that Mundo made of conversations between himself and Lulu. He shows them text messages that Lulu had been sending to him, talking about the deal, talking about how much money this is going to cost. And they become very worried that Ramon's life is in serious danger, and they decide that they've got to move quickly.
So they give Mundo more recording devices. They tell him to record all of these conversations. Mundo absolutely hates it. I mean, this is his worst scenario, that he's got to do more of this. But as he puts it, Ramon's life is in the balance, so he really doesn't believe that he has any choice. And he's very good at it. He's a very good confidant to Lulu in the sense that he gets her to talk. And she gets so comfortable talking with him that she starts to explain that the divorce might be finalized on July 22nd. And if that happens, she will no longer get Ramon's life insurance or his pension. She tells Mundo that she deserves that money, that she wants that money. She believes that she has earned that money. So they need to make sure that Ramon dies before July 22nd.
So what does Mundo do next once he has that knowledge?
The police are listening to all of this, and they decide they've got to move quickly. Now, all this time, Ramon is living at home with Lulu. They're still sharing the house. So Ramon is having to act like he is just going about his business. He's none the wiser, but he says, terrified that his wife is trying to kill him as he's sleeping in bed next to her. The detectives are trying to figure out, you know, do we have a case or not? And they were concerned that because Lulu didn't have any type of criminal history and was this, I mean, she is a gorgeous woman who Ramon says could be very persuasive when she chose to be. The detectives were worried that they just didn't have enough to convince a jury. They really wanted a slam dunk case. And they come to Mundo and Ramon with a plan.
They had me by myself and said, we're going to take a picture of you dead. I'm like, repeat that again? And then bring out pictures of actual dead people with bullet holes on their head.
Is this a normal thing that police do? Because I just could not believe that they did this.
Mina, I have been an investigative reporter for more than 2 decades now. I have never in my life heard of police faking a death quite like what they end up doing with Ramon. And they admit they hadn't ever seen anybody do it except in Hollywood, but they thought it was a good plan.
Where does this idea come from?
Believe it or not, TV. From time to time, I do watch, you know, shows on investigations and shows on solicitations of capital murder. And if it works for them, then it's most probably going to work for us.
And they said, let's see if we can do it. Let's see if we can pull it off.
So how did they even go about figuring out how to fake his death?
Mina, how would you figure it out? How would you do it?
YouTube.
Exactly. That's what they did. They went to YouTube and they watched makeup tutorials.
The only concern we had was, would it look real? And it is surprising how quick you can learn how to apply makeup on YouTube.
And then they go to the grocery store and they buy some corn syrup and they buy some red food coloring. They used a combination of all that stuff. By the time they're done, he looks like he's had a gunshot wound right through his head. It took them a little while. They did a couple attempts, but it ends up being very, very convincing.
So once they figure out how to make him look like a dead body, when and how do they even stage the photo?
So remember, Lulu wants him dead by July 22nd. So on July 21st, Ramon calls his family and says he's going out of town. He'll be in touch. But in reality, he's laying at the bottom of a police SUV, hiding, and detectives drive him to this very large, essentially hidden piece of land where county dump trucks unload dirt and debris from construction sites, mounds of different colored dirt, and it's very large, surrounded by trees, and it's a very creepy place. He says it was just the eeriest thing because they dug a 6-foot deep hole as his grave, and they tell Ramon to take off his clothes. He's just wearing his underwear, and he puts his arms behind his back and he lays down in the grave, and he's got his eyes closed and he's told to pretend he's dead. As he's laying there, he can hear the police above him talking, taking his photograph. And he's realizing this is what could have possibly have happened to him. And he's starting to wonder, how on earth did it all come down to this? Why couldn't they just have a divorce like normal people? And at that moment, he says he comes to the conclusion that Lulu never loved him.
While he's lying in the bottom of the fake grave.
Yeah, he starts to wonder if he was targeted. Did she accidentally step on his toe that night, or did she watch him and saw his Versace sweater he was wearing that night and the expensive watch that he was wearing that night and decide, that's my guy, that's the guy I'm going to use to get the things that I want in life? He doesn't know the answer. She's never explained to him whether she loved him or not, but he doesn't think she did.
It was all a plan. It was all a plan. She never loved me. The only thing she loved was the money and the fact that she became an American citizen.
Okay, so Ramon emerges from the fake grave and the detectives have the fake photos in hand. How do they use them to trick Lulu?
So that night, Paco, the undercover officer, meets up with Lulu and she gets back into the truck. She's sitting in the passenger side of the front seat. He hands over the phone, his phone, to Lulu, and on it is a photo, is one of the photographs of Ramon.
No se levanta ya.
After a few breaths, she just starts laughing.
Do they arrest her on the spot?
No. They let her go. The detective drives away. They look at their evidence. They see what they got. And they decide to send a uniformed police officer who's wearing a body cam. And he goes to the gym where they know Lulu's working. And he tells her that they have received a missing persons report.
Hey, this was a Detective Martinez with the constable's office.
Uh-huh.
I had a few questions for you. Is there somewhere we can talk in private?
Sure.
When's the last time you saw Mr. Sosa?
I didn't see him and none of this. But I was talking to...
The last time you saw him was on the 15th?
On the 15th.
They could tell she was lying. And at that point, the officer tells her to stand up and starts to arrest her, and they begin to read her Miranda rights.
Okay, Ms. Sosa, stand up, please. You're under arrest. You're under arrest.
Why?
Okay. Ma'am, it's okay. Stay back. We have a warrant.
So in the end, the sting operation is successful. Lulu is arrested for a solicitation of capital murder, and then 15 months later, she pleads guilty and is sentenced to 20 years in prison. She's now serving her sentence at a women's correction facility near Houston. Tisha, what happened to Ramon?
Well, Ramon lost pretty much everything. He lost the gym, he lost his nonprofit, and he lost most of his money. You know, through the divorce and having to hire lawyers, it really took a toll. He is trying to get back on his feet.
It took a long time. It was hard on me, and I'm just happy it's all over with.
he's going back to his very first love, which is teaching kids how to box.
My life has changed so much. I could have been dead. I don't think about little things. But when I train kids, this is something that I want to be around.
I'm proud of y'all, man. You're doing really, really well, man.
Mundo took a really serious risk working with the detectives. Several months after this began to settle down, a television show doing a version of what happened reveals Mundo's real name. And word starts to spread in his old neighborhood about what happened.
Have you had threats made against you since Lulu's arrest?
Yes.
Do they continue today?
Yes. What hurts the most is knowing that my family's at risk now.
He was broken by all of this. Police have called Mundo a hero. I mean, they went on camera and they said Mundo is a hero. But Mundo says in the old neighborhood, they see him as a snitch. He's a rat. He knew the rules. He knew the consequences. But for me, perhaps the real measure of the man is he says, despite everything that happened, he would do it again because he saved his friend's life.
Do you regret it?
I regret the way things ended up, but I don't regret doing it. Everybody's alive. That's how I try to reconcile everything. Everybody's alive.
Thanks so much, Tisha.
Of course.
Coming up, how one minor league baseball team found a side hustle. Hi guys. Given everything that is happening in the world right now, most of us are buying things online. I saw that AT&T started doing two really helpful things for those who want to buy a new phone or device online. They are offering fast, free, non-contact delivery and curbside pickup so that online shopping is as simple and safe as possible. On top of that, they have a flexible return policy so you can shop at ease. You can visit att.com to learn how to shop online from the safety of your home 24/7. Subject to change, restrictions apply. Here's another story I want you to know. While MLB is busy plotting its return, it's still unclear what will happen to minor league baseball. MILB was already facing a possible cutdown in the number of teams, and it now seems inevitable that those teams, which depend almost entirely on stadium revenue, will take a massive financial hit this year. There's no way for them to make money from staging games, but one team, the Pensacola Blue Wahoos, has found a creative solution. This AA affiliate of the Minnesota Twins, whose team is named after a fish, in case you're wondering, recently listed their stadium on Airbnb. It's the first time, they say, that a baseball stadium has ever been made available on a rental service. Now, this isn't their only fundraising plan. They also rent out the park's 9-hole disc golf course, which was designed by one of their co-owners, golfer Bubba Watson. But the rental option is unique insofar as, for $1,500, you can stay the entire night in a bedroom next to the clubhouse. You can also use the field, the batting cage, and a setup for batting practice. But before you think you can go ahead and stage a game, know that the rental is limited to 10 people, which should make social distancing fairly easy in that space. I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.